And we're holding on page Chof in Gittin, the paragraph Gef Tzadik Amud Aleph, middle voice Mem Tes. Mishnah says, last Mishnah of the Masechta, having talked about throughout the entire Masechta about the Dinim of Gittin, so now it finishes off by what are proper grounds for giving a get in the first place. So the Rebbe comments in that Nesicha, there was a time in Tavshin Yud Tes, Chof Av, the Rebbe made a hadron on Masechta Gittin. Parts of it are printed in Chelek Dalet and Chelek Tes. Parts of it are in Teres Menachem. And one thing that Rebbe makes the point is, after having discussed everything about Gittin, now the Mishnah wants to stress once and for all, lo yagarish, that really a person should not be divorcing, as the Gemara is going to say. It's generally not a positive thing, and therefore the better thing is to talk about Gittin only as an abstract thing rather than something that's actually going to have to happen in practice. The more so, since a husband and wife symbolizes the relationship between us and the Eibishter, and there's certainly no get possible. So the Mishnah says, "B'shama Omer lo yigarish odemus ishtoi elim ken motza ba dvar erva." A man shouldn't divorce his wife unless he finds in her a matter of erva. So it doesn't have to mean we're not talking about that he actually has blatant evidence that she was mizaneh, then it's a mitzvah, then he has no choice but to divorce her. We're talking about, like we learned yesterday, various cases where there's not solid evidence of erva, but at least there's things that she's acting in a pritzistic way. The Mishnah in Ksubas mentions a number of them, for example, where she doesn't dress quite according to the rules of tznius and various other possibilities. Anyway, Shenemar, as the pasuk says, ki motza bo erva stover. He found in her an erva of a matter. So in other words, the pasuk is saying that's the only good grounds for divorce. This Hillel says it doesn't have to be as much as an erva stover. It can be even if she burnt his food. Rashi points out, hikdicha can mean burnt it as in overcooked it and burnt it literally, or it can mean oversalted it. And apparently we're talking about where she's doing it maliciously or whatever, and therefore the Hillel says that's a good enough reason. Shenemachim motzeba ervas dover. This Hillel holds that ervas dover doesn't mean a matter of erva; it means one or the other, either erva or dover, any other matter that would motivate him to not get along and therefore to divorce. Keep in mind, by the way, the original din of the Gemara is that all of this could be Bal Korcha. Wasn't until Cherem de Ben Gershon they have a concept that a get requires the wife's consent as well. So here we're talking about, the idea being, I think Shamshin Afol Hirsch explains this someplace, the Torah, and the Eibishter knew that he can trust the Jewish man to not go and stand casually divorce his wife, as you have so often nowadays in Goyish society, but rather that he's going to use this, this ability only where necessary. As time went on, then there came a point when Rabbeinu Gershom realized, and Rabbeinu Gershom found it necessary to put in that takana. Anyway, Rabbi Akiva Omer, afilu motza acheres nohe mena. Rabbi Akiva says even if he finds another one who's more attractive to him, then that's also a reason for him to divorce. Shenema, because he says, because the pasuk says v'hoyeh imlesim tzachen ba'enav, it will be if she doesn't find favor in his eyes. Famous question a lot of the Mefoshim ask. Rabbi Akiva, the great Chassid, he himself knows the value of a good wife. His whole Torah comes, as he says to his Talmidim, Shaliv Lachem Shalahu, that all of his Torah comes through his wife Rachel. He's saying if a man finds another woman who he likes better, then that's a valid reason to divorce his wife. So one idea is Taka, that basically he's saying, yeah, I mean, a husband and wife are supposed to be v'hoyu l'vaser echad. They should be completely devoted to one another. If he's already then, in other words, it's almost like at that point she's better off without him, kind of. So he says that would be a valid reason. There is actually one of those sichas in the part that's excerpted in Chelek Dalet that goes into a bit of an arichos on it that it represents in avoida. You have a person, a person's avoider is to him. His neshama to his body is like a husband and is like a husband and wife. The neshama, the husband symbolizes the neshama, the wife, the body. So there's a certain kind of avoider that a person has, which represents the marriage between the husband and wife, between the neshama and the body. Now, what happens then when this avoider, a person is having trouble with it? So Bishama is going to say only if there's ervas dover, only if it's something where it's outright, it's causing him to be over on isurim, then that's a valid reason to give up that avoider, to divorce oneself from it and go find a different one. Bishillel, who are usually makel, here also they're following their shitta and being makel, they're saying it doesn't need to go that far. It can even be hikdicha tavshiloi, it's not an outright something that's also, but it's something that's interfering with other things that he needs to be doing in his avoida. And Rabbi Akiva says, "I feel the motza acheres no heimena." If he finds he has no gishmak in this avoda anymore, it's just become dry and mechanical, then that would be a valid reason for him to give it up and go find something else. And in the end, the most of the poskim paskin the halacha is like this hillel that motza acheres no heimena is not valid grounds for a get, but hikdicha tavshiloi is, which represents an avoda. In other words, that just because you don't have a geshmak in it, that's not a reason to give it up and go thinking you're going to start finding something else. But if it's actually interfering with something else, hikdicha tavshiloi, then yeah, that would be a valid reason to give that up and go. After consultation with a mashpia, and go find something else. There are, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch at the beginning of Hilchos Gittin, it brings this and several other related halachas on this topic, and you have quite a bit of discussion among the poskim over there about the details. Is the halacha in fact like Beis Hillel, or is it maybe the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva? And if regardless, either one, does it mean that if a man is going to divorce his wife not for these grounds, but stand for no good reason, does Beis Din have to actually force him to not do that, as the Gemara is going to go on to say that Hashem hates a person who does that, or are we saying that he shouldn't be doing it, but Beis Din is not going to compel him to not do that? So the Gemara says, but my committee. What is the underlying machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel versus Rabbi Akiva? Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we understand that Beis Shammai is saying ervas dover is one expression, a matter of erva, and Beis Hillel is saying, as Rashi had said, that it means one or the other, erva or dover. But meanwhile, if Rabbi Akiva is saying, forget about ervas dover, you also have v'hoyer imosim tzachein ve'enav, so what's the point of the machlokas? Where's the nub of the machlokas between him and them? So the answer is b'dir Rish Lakish. They're arguing about what Rish Lakish says. Ge'omer Rish Lakish, ki meshamash b'dalad l'shoynis. The word ki in Tanakh can actually be used for four different meanings. If, Dilma, perhaps, Ella, however, Deha, because. Rashi goes over here and in a few other places in Shas where it mentions this point. Rashi goes through many examples of each one. So we often translate ki as because. But many times you have where it means if. So Rashi gives examples. Let's say ki yimotze b'kirbacha, ki yikorei kan sipur, etc. If there happens in your cities, if you find a bird's nest, etc., then do such and such. So in all those cases, ki means if. Then you have sometimes the ki can mean, sometimes it can mean however. And an example Rashi brings is in Parshas Vayera, Vayomer loy ki tzachok. There you actually have two meanings. You have two different keys in the pasuk, each of which means a different thing. About Tachachesh Sarah, Sarah denied that she had laughed when she's called on it. Why'd you laugh? Lomazet Tzachka Sarah. So the pasuk says, About Tachachesh Sarah Leimer, Loi Tzachakti, Ki Yoreya. There the key means because. Vayomer, and he said, Loi, no, Ki Tzachok doesn't mean because you laughed. It means however you laughed. So therefore, Ki sometimes means however. Then you have, Rashi goes on to say, now sometimes you have, let's say for example, the Pasuk says in Parshas Ekev, Rashi mentions it on the Pasuk over there as well, ki soma bilavavcha, ki, you're going to say in your heart, these goyim and Eretz Yisrael are very mighty, how are we going to conquer them? Don't think like that, zochor tizko, remember that Hashem is on your side. Now, Rashi points out here and on the Pasuk, it can't mean if you think that way, then you should remember that Hashem is on your side. And what does that mean? If you don't think that way, then you don't have to remember that Hashem is on your side? No, it means perhaps perhaps it might start getting into your head, Rav Magoyim Eilem Imeni, and it shouldn't, because Zohar Tizker. And then you have many times where it means because. Rashi also points out, by the way, first of all, in Targum Onkelos, when you do Shnai Mikravech of Targum, for example, you'll find nearly all the keys are translated Arei in Aramaic. And Rashi points out that Arei in Aramaic has the same range of meanings as key in Lashon Kodesh. So therefore, Onkelos can use the word Arei and exactly translates key with all its shades of meaning. Rashi also points out that a number of these things also have shades of meaning within them. The if, for example, sometimes the if is not necessarily if it may happen or it may not. For example, it can also mean when. And you find sometimes we know there are some mitzvahs, for example, that are introduced in Lashon Kodesh with im, the im takir of minchas vikorim, im kesef talva, and so forth, where im means if, but it doesn't mean, as it actually points out in each of those places, it doesn't mean if as in you have a choice in the matter, it means more like when. So the same way key, with its meaning of if, sometimes there can be a variation of that, which means when. So it's not counted as a fifth lashon, it's a variant of e, which is if. There are mafoshim, by the way, who explain that sometimes key might also, there are some mafoshim explain that key might conceivably also sometimes mean although. For example, in Parshas B'Shalach, you have l'nochem alakim derech eretz plishtim ki korev hu. So some of the mafoshim explain that ki korev hu means although it is close by, nevertheless the Eibishter didn't take them that way because they might be afraid and they're going to return to Mitzrayim. All the mafoshim say that. No, it means because it's close, as it actually mentions on the pasuk, and therefore if they do get frightened, it would be very easy for them to return to Mitzrayim. Okay. So the point is, so you have all those different possible meanings of the word ki. So Now that we have that, we'll understand the machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel versus Rabbi Akiva. Beis Shammai Sabri, Beis Shammai holds, and Beis Hillel also, that the pasuk flows like this. V'hoya im lo simtachein ve'enav, it'll be if he doesn't find favor in his eyes, ki motzaba ervas dover. So what does the ki mean over here? Beis Shammai, and Beis Hillel translated, geha, because motzaba ervas dover, he found in her an ervas dover, and now you have, within that, which doesn't mean ervas dover, or doesn't mean an erva or a dover. So according to Beis Shammai, therefore it means the pasuk is saying the only valid reason for him to be divorcing her is ki, because why is she not matzah chen reinav? Ki, because matzah ba'er vasdavar. Other than that, there's no valid reason for him to not like her. So Beis Hillel agrees, except that they say er vasdavar means two different things. Rabbi Akiva suffer, whether Rabbi Akiva holds, no, ki matzah ba'er vasdavar, according to him, the ki means if. So it means inami, so it's one or the other. Im lo simtachein be'enav, ki, or matzah ba'er vasdavar, he finds in her an ervas dover. So it's one or the other. Inami matzah ba'er vasdavar, or he found in her an ervas dover, so therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's fine for there to be lo simtachein be'enav, even though it's not, there's no ervas dover, because it's one or the other.
Usually, we don't go from minakal and a kovet. So it should be the other way.
Actually, it is. Yeah, no, it could. The loisim sechein ve'enav, or even worse, he found in her an eres davar. Yeah. So the Gemara goes on and mentions the point. Amalei mesharshi l'rova. So now here we're talking about where to begin with they were married, and then something happens, and now their marriage is breaking up, and because of the eres davar, or because loisim sechein ve'enav, as the case may be. So in this connection, Rav Mesharshia asks Rava, in liber legarsha, what if the husband intends to divorce his wife, the yeshevas tacht of a mashamashdei, and she doesn't know that, and she's still living with him and serving him. Mashamashdei, by the way, could mean tashmish, although there are mafoshim who explain that it means more generally service, as in household tasks and the various things around the house that the woman does, that the wife does specifically for her husband, etc. So then what happens? Mahu, what's the din? Meaning Rashi says, is there an oinish involved in that or not? Rava answers by quoting a pasuk, Al tachrish al reyach hara, don't plot evil against your friend, Rahu Yoshev Lavetach Itach, when he's living securely with you. So in other words, yes, the pasuk is telling you in Mishle, Shlomo Melech is telling you that no, this is the wrong thing to do. Maharsha points out the word Al tachrish, the simple meaning of Al tachrish means don't plot. But the Gemara is also, Rava is also understanding that it's also Meloshin Shtika, that it's also, that it means that he's being quiet. So he's thinking already, he wants to divorce her, but he's pretending that he's still in love with her and that everything's fine. That Maharsha points out, we learned not so long ago in Nedarim when we went through Enyaqov, that kind of thing is called Grushas Halev, that he already intends to divorce her, but he hasn't told her yet. So he shouldn't do it. There's a different Gemara also that says, Lo Yisa Adam Isha V'Daita L'Garisha, that says a man shouldn't marry a woman with the intent to divorce her. The Rambam actually brings these points in two different sets of halachas, in Hilchos Ishus and in Hilchos Gerushin. There's a Sicha in Chelek Lama Dalad where the Rebbe analyzes the Rambam's position on the matter. What exactly is the grounds behind it? You could say that's a matter of, that's not a marriage to have where he's intending to divorce her, especially if he married her to begin with that thought in mind. Or you could have, it's a matter of a lack of derech eretz, as the Gemara seems to be saying over here, to be pretending as though everything's good and really you hate the person. So then it develops the idea in the Sikha over there, the Rambam, the fact that he brings it in two different places, in Hilchos Ishus and in Hilchos Gerushin, he wants to indicate that in fact both factors are true, and you have one of them, Mephoshim talk about there being Nafkamina. Let's say, for example, if to begin with, when he marries her, he tells her that he intends to divorce her. So it's sad that he's plotting against her when she doesn't know. There's no problem with that. He told her to begin with. She went into it voluntarily. On the other hand, as a matter of marriage, as a matter of issues, it's still not the right thing to do. So the Rebbe develops the idea that according to the Rambam, both factors are true, and then he talks about, so how does that, we learned yesterday and 2 days ago about Vnei Shantim, that the Eibishter tells in advance that we Jewish people are going to be kicked out of Eretz Yisrael after X number of years. Isn't that, so to speak, a violation of Al Tafer Sharia Hara, because granted, it depends on our Meisim, but the Eibishter knows to begin with what our Meisim are going to be, so isn't it that problem? And the answer is, as it ever develops in Nath and other Sichas, is, as the Gemara itself actually points out in Sanhedrin, the breakage of the interruption of the relationship between us and Eibishter is not truly a get. The Gemara mentioned that there's a pasuk in Yeshaya that says where the Jewish people are saying that Hashem divorced us, and Hashem says no, Eizah Sefer Krisus Imchem. Where's the get that I gave? There's no get. So therefore we're not truly divorced. It's rather like the Gemara phrases it, Ki'isha Shaholach Baila Lemedinat Sayam, like a woman whose husband went overseas, but he's going to return to her. The same way, it's not a true get between us and Eibishter. We are still constantly connected to the Eibishter, and therefore there's no issue of noisy issue of a daita legarsha. In that connection, also, that I've mentioned, that's why the beginning of the Masechta begins with the case of maybe getting him dinas ayam. He says, b'fane nichta, b'fane nechtam, meaning, in other words, it's symbolically, it's as though the husband is there, and the shliach is coming and saying that it was written and signed in his presence, representing that even in our golus, which seems to be like a get, it's not truly a get, because the Eibishter is still very much there, and there's no true get, and there's no true gerushin. So that's how the beginning and the end of the Masechta end up connecting.
So it depends on our behavior.
Also depends on our behavior, but the point is, no matter how bad our behavior is, there's still no true get. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that in the time after the Churban Bayis tradition, some people came to the Navi Yechezkel. There's a medrash that says that actually included among them even Rechanan, Mishael, and Azariah, the tzaddikim of that time. And they asked, if a husband divorces his wife or if a master sells a slave, then they have no further relationship between them. So the same way, the Eibishter seems to have divorced us and seems to have sold us as slaves to the Goyim, so therefore do we owe the Eibishter any more allegiance? And Yechezkel tells them, most long nevuah, and says to them, no, very, and tells them very sharply in the Eibishter's name, no, v'chema shvuch, v'yod chazoko, v'chema shvucha, etc., emlei chaleichem, and I'm ruling over you, no matter what, you never separated from me, don't even think it. All right, the Gemara goes on. Tanya, hoyer of Meir Oimer, k'shem shadeus b'maychol, kach deus b'noshim. The same way as people have different opinions when it comes to their food, as far as if something falls into it that shouldn't be eaten, or what they would do with the food, then kach deus b'noshim, the same way different kinds of husbands have different opinions of what they should do as far as when their wives are not behaving the way they're supposed to. One kind of person, a fly, falls into his cup, he throws out the entire cup and doesn't drink it at all. So he throws out, in English they say, to throw out the baby with the bathwater. So he throws out, rather than just throwing out the fly and the rest of the content of the cup is fine, he throws out the whole thing. This is the midah of a type of fellow who is exemplified by Pappus ben Yehuda. Rashi identifies him as the husband, we find in a different Gemara, the husband of Miriam Megadla Neshaya. Now, it's interesting about this Pappus and Miriam. There are other Gemaras that say that there are other Gemaras that imply that that this Miriam was the mother of Oser Ish and Pappus was her husband. And meanwhile, that she was Mizana with a Goyish soldier by the name of Pandira, and then their son was Oser Ish. On the other hand, there's a Pappus ben Yehuda mentioned in the time of Rabbi Akiva, and that's long after Oser Ish's times, so it's not necessarily the same person. In any case, so this Pappus ben Yehuda, when he would leave the house, he would lock the door to prevent his wife from getting out because he was so suspicious, he didn't want her to talk with anybody. Now, the problem is, Rashi says, that's overreacting. The problem is, precisely then, she starts hating him that she's locked up like that, and then she'll look for any opportunity to be Mizana, and if his wife was Miriam Megadla Neshaya, then we see that that is exactly what ended up happening. So that's the first kind. So it's not good. That's going too far. On the other extreme, then you have the middle ground. Then you have a kind of person where a fly falls into his cup. So he throws out the fly and drinks the rest of what's in the cup. That's the normal midah of a regular person. She talks with her brothers and her relatives, and he doesn't mind that. So he does make sure that she's not going to have too much opportunity to be around not unrelated men. But like that, then that's good. Then you have a third kind of person where a fly falls into a tamchui. Literally, a tamchui is a serving dish where they have compartments in it for different kinds of foods. Think of like a candy dish or something like that. Here it means more generally a dish where they have some kind of cooked food. Mausha points out, in the first two examples, you have the fly fell into a cup. Here you have the fly falls into a pot into a serving dish of food. So Mausha points out, because here the Gemara is going to give the example over here that he just goes and then eats it, fly and all, or at least that, he puts the fly in his mouth and then spits it out, whatever, because fine, he doesn't want to be over. The Gemara tells us the person is over on several lavim and should get several sets of malchus for eating a fly, so they're fine, he's not going to eat it, but whatever, he's not going to be repulsed by it at all. So now nobody's going to do that if it's in a cup, because there it's very clearly obvious, but it falls into food, and it's hot food, the fly dissolves over there. So he just eats it together with the food and is not makbid on it. So in the third one, it gives the example of cooked food. So this would be the midah of a bad kind of person. He sees his wife going out with her head uncovered. The Gemara tells us in Ksuvos, you have those two aspects of head covering. There's what's called Das Moshe and Das Yehudis. Das Moshe, meaning the Din Min HaTorah, is the basic concept that a woman has to have her head covered. We learn that from the Sota. She gets her hair uncovered in public. We learn from that Jewish women have their head covered. Then the Gemara points out over there that you can have that still Min HaTorah should be Yotze. For example, if she wears, let's say, a tichel that has holes in it or something. Then you have what's called Das Yehudis, the minig of Jewish women, which is that they make sure their hair is fully covered. So here she's going out. Verosha Perua, the pashtus could mean either one. The pashtus could mean either one of them. The toiva bashuk, or she's spinning wool in the marketplace, where the result is that then she's lifting up her arms as she's spinning, and her upper arms end up getting exposed. You look, by the way, in Shas, you really don't find any place where it talks explicitly about the standards for tznius. This stuff we're all familiar with, that you have to have covering the knees and covering the elbows and so on and so forth. We collect them here and there from various scattered, almost incidental references in Shas, and this is one of them, from which we see that a woman's upper arms have to be covered. Or she wears clothes that are open on both sides, Rashi describes, near her armpits. And Rashi describes, like the Goyish women in France in his times, where you could see their skin from their sides. I guess they wore sleeveless dresses or blouses or whatever, so you could see some of their skin near their armpits. So those kinds of things. He shouldn't be tolerating that she's gonna act that way. And she bathes together with men. So the one asked on that last one, Imbnei Adam, what do you mean with men? Rashi explains, if she does that, then there's no question. There's a glayim l'dover. There's very strong reason to assume that she's an out-and-out zoyna. Then of course he has no choice. Beis Din is going to force him to divorce her. So why are we mentioning that in the category of the other ones where she's not acting the way she's supposed to, but it doesn't rise to the level of blatant znus? Tosfos doesn't learn that way. Tosfos says, I guess Tosfos asks, after all the other things also, he has a requirement to divorce her. In fact, Tosfos refers to the Gemara in Sota that asks precisely that question. When a woman is a veres al das yehudis, when she's over on the standards of tznius that Jewish women keep, then is he allowed to stay married to her or not? The Gemara leaves the question open. So Tosfos says, first Tosfos gives the answer that, no, fine, since the Gemara leaves the question over there open, then we can say over here only mitzvah legarisha, he can say, as he's going to go on to say, that it's a mitzvah to divorce her, but not necessarily a choiva. So the Gemara is asking, if she bathes with men, then there's no question it's a choiva to divorce her, as opposed to these things that may only be a mitzvah, depending on how that Gemara and Sota would be reconciled. Anyway, then Tosfos gives another explanation. What the Gemara is asking is, even the biggest Odom Ra, even this kind of person who, I think I skipped a line in the Gemara over here. So he sucks the fly and eats it. So Marsha explained, again, as we said, that it meant that the fly gets dissolved in the food and he eats it, food and all. Fly and all. Other Mephoshim say, fine, it means maybe the fly is intact, but like he's so cheap on the food, he'll suck to be able to get any food that's stuck to the fly, and then he'll throw it away. But whatever, the point is, this is the Odom Ra we're saying over here. So Tosfos says in their second explanation, even the worst Odom Ra is not gonna stand for his wife bathing with other men and then consider that normal. So rather, the question is exactly that. The Gemara is asking, then what do we mention that in the category of the Odom Ra, a husband who tolerates such a thing, is not an Odom Ra. He's not normal. And the answer is, Ella b'mokum shebnei adam rotzin. Rather, what it meant was that she bathes in the same place where men do. So they're in the middle of getting dressed, and then she goes in and starts, and she goes in there. So therefore, so she's not actually bathing and getting undressed with them. So fine, it's not actual znus, but nevertheless, it's a pretty sticky thing to do. Anyway, continues the Meir. Zu mitzvah natura legarisha. Such a wife, it's a mitzvah from the Torah for her husband to divorce her. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki motzah ba'ervas davar v'goyim. He finds in her a matter of erva, and even Beis Shammai is going to agree that rises to the level of ervas davar. And now the pasuk continues, v'shilcha mibesoi. He sends her away from his house, v'holcha v'hoysa le'ishacher. And then she goes and marries another man. Now, why the word acher? It could have said sheni. First, the pasuk calls her first husband by la harishon. So Marshal says the expected expression would be her second husband is her sheni. V'holcha b'hoisel is sheni. Why acher? Loimar tells you she'ein zeb ben zu. This was also in Sota a couple of days ago in the Daf Yomi for Sfira. Anyway, hakosav kroy acher loimar she'ein zeb ben zugish harishon. This person is not a match for the first one. You can't call him anything similar. You can't call him that he's the second one compared to the first one because he's a completely different kind of person. Zehoitzi, Rishah Mibesah, the first husband sent away a Rishah from his house who was behaving this way. Vizehifnis, Rishah Losef Besah, and the second one brings in a Rishah and therefore he can't even be put in the same category as the first one. Ion Yaakov points out, you have here this woman there's reason to suspect that there may be znus over here, so he's calling him Acher al derech like you have. Acher was so called when he went off the derech, and al derech a pasuk that mentions the Achar hadelas v'amezuzah that refers to an isha neyefes that the guy she's being mezana with hides behind the door and the doorpost, and he used the word Achar over there, so similar to Acher over here. So, Zocha Sheni, if the second one eventually is Zocha Shilcha, then he sends her away. Then, in other words, he realizes eventually that, you know what was I doing marrying such a woman? And he sends her away and divorces her. Shenema, the Pasuk says, Sneha Hishachron, as the Pasuk says, the second man, the last man, hates her and divorces her. Vimlav Kevarte, and if not, if he doesn't realize, then she's going to end up burying him. In other words, he's going to die young. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, Oichiyom Seisha Achron, or if the second man, or if the last man dies, and the ki yomo, as we just said, ki can have various meanings. One of them meaning something like when, meaning kedai hu b'misa. It can be like when he dies, he deserves to die. Shazeh hoitzi rishah, but basically, it was a hechnis rishah. We'll say it's basically because the first one took a rishah out of his house, the second one brought her in. So therefore, the pasuk is, and as Maharsha points out, the second one probably knew about the divar erva. So it might be, in other words, that so even if he doesn't find a dvar erva in her now, but still he knows what she did before. Now, obviously, if she does tshuva, if she sees that she's gone to the opposite extreme and is very tzniastic, then he has no reason to divorce her. But if not, if it's just a matter of she did this before and there's still concern that she may do it again, then better that he should divorce her. And if not, then he doesn't have that source, and then he's going to end up dying. In this connection, there's psukim and Malachi that talk about the problem of divorce. In the time of Malachi, this is the beginning of the second Mishnah, there were many Jewish men who didn't like their wives. The Medrash tells us the journey to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Mishnah and to resettle Eretz Yisrael was a very difficult one, and many of the Jewish women lost their good looks. And Jewish women are beautiful. Bnei Yisrael, Yofa saying, as we learned in the Dorim, But the hassle and everything of the journey caused a lot of them to lose their good looks. So some of the men divorced their Jewish wives, and others went and married Goyish women, which is the why you have the whole problem in Ezra and Nehemiah, and Malachi mentions it also, of intermarriage. And then you have some of them would keep their Jewish wives, but they would also marry a second wife, a Goyish wife, and they would relegate their original wife, their Jewish wife, to the status of a second. Everyone. And then so the Pasuk describes how these women are going around the Mizbeach and crying, as the Gemara is going to quote in the Pasuk in a couple of lines. And so Malachi says in this connection, the Pasuk, Ki Sonei Shalach, Hashem hates the sending away. So what does that mean? So, well, literally it means ki. Again, ki can mean it can mean if. Sonei, he hates, Shalach, send away. So what does that Pasuk mean? Rabbi Yehuda says, the Pasuk means, im senesa, the Navi is saying, fine, if you actually hate your wife, shalach, then send her away. Meaning, like Rabbi Akiva, who says that even if there is loy motzah chen be'enav, is a valid enough reason to divorce her. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, sonri hamshaleach. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, what the Pasuk is saying is, a man who divorces his wife is hated by Hashem. And the Gemara points out, v'loy pligi, there's actually no machlokas between them, hob zivug rishon, hob zivug sheni, because it depends on a first marriage or a second marriage. Rashi, by the way, brings a different girsa over here, not sonu yamshaleach, but im snua, if she's someone who's acting in a hateful way towards Hashem, then shalach, then go ahead and divorce her, meaning that would follow Beth Shammai that we're talking about with his Erebus Dover over here. Whereas according to Basil, we would say we won't prevent him from divorcing her, but nevertheless it would be sonri. So here is also where the posts can discuss based on these different Gersois and Rashi and in the Gemara over here, whether the Gemara is implying that the halacha is like Beth Hillel, that only erva or dover dicha tavshila is a valid reason for divorce, but loy simcha chen be'enav is not, or whether the Gemara is meaning to say that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, that even motza acheres nohe mena is a valid reason. Anyway, so v'loy pligi haba zivug rishon haba zivug sheni. There's a difference between. Between the first wife and the second wife. The zivug rishon, the first marriage, and the poskim can say that in this connection, zivug rishon actually means where both of them, it's their first marriage. So she's, as it actually says, as the Pasuk calls it over there in Malachi, Eishes Ne'urim, the wife of his youth, and that's the context the Pasuk is talking about over there, that the man is being unfaithful to Eishes Ne'urim. So therefore, then the only valid reason would actually be if there's Erevas Dover involved. Or maybe if it's Dichat Tavshiloi. As opposed to when it comes to a second marriage, then it's not so bad. Then it can even be im sanesa, if he hates her, then shalach, then it's a valid reason to get divorced. The Amar of Elazar, as we see that there is this distinction between a first and second marriage, the Amar of Elazar, call him a garish ishtar rishona, a man divorces his first wife after the Mizbeach murdered all of Demos. Even the Mizbeach sheds tears for him. Now, what does that mean, that the Mizbeach sheds tears for him? So there's a lot of different explanations of what it means, Dafka the Mizbeach. The Meiri makes a point on it. He says like this, the Mizbeach is supposed to be Mechaper for the Jewish people. So it's like the Sanhedrin, the defender of the Jewish people. But here, a person divorces his first wife without a good reason, then he's acted so badly that like even the Mizbeach can't find reason to justify him. So it becomes a Kategor instead and sheds tears, as in saying, look what this guy is doing. Even I, who am here for the purpose of being Mechaper on the Jewish people, can't find a way to justify what he did. Marsha refers over here to something that he explains in Sanhedrin, where this Gemara is also brought, where he says the vote is, as long as a couple's married, then there's going to be korbanos brought on the Mizbeach every so often by the couple. Every so often the woman's going to have a baby, and she's going to bring a korban after she gives birth. Now when they get divorced, then the Mizbeach is sad, because now it's not going to have those korbanos anymore. So in one place in that sikha, the Rebbe develops the idea that somewhat along the same lines that the Meiri says that the Mizbeach is supposed to be, among other things, Mechaper for the Jewish people. And here we're saying that now a man divorces his first wife, and that represents also a breakup of the relationship between us and the Eivishter, and therefore the Mizbeach, which is supposed to connect us with the Eivishter, is murdered all of Demoris, and saying this is a very sad thing that there should have to be that breakup like that. Marsha, by the way, brings an interesting point over here, and unusually brings it in. The Marsha's Pirush on Gemara is divided into two parts. You have Chidushe Halochas, where he analyzes the Gemara Rashi Tosfos from the Halacha point of view. And very little of it gets into Ein Yaakov, of course, because Ein Yaakov is not dealing with the halacha parts of the Gemara for the most part. And then you have Chidushe Agadis, which deals with all the Agadah parts that we have here in Ein Yaakov. Here, uncharacteristically, the Marsha has a good part of this explanation in Chidushe Halachas. So he explains that the psukim that the Gemara is going to quote here from Malachi, are hinting at both a first marriage and a second marriage, and Malachi, the Navi, is hinting to the Jewish people, you know, you had a first marriage with Hashem. Unfortunately, you messed up, and you were unfaithful in it. Now Hashem's giving you a second chance, don't mess that one up also. Over Eishes Ne'urecha al Yivgoid, as the Pasuk says, let him not be unfaithful to the wife of your youth. Now why is he using Over Eishes Ne'urecha in third person, and then al Yivgoid, he should not be unfaithful, so he should not be disloyal. So Marashar explains, that means, you know, the Novi is telling them, be faithful to your wives, and then al Yivgoid, then Hashem will not have to be unfaithful to you, and you'll have a Beis Hamikdash, and you won't have a Churban and Golos again. So Shenema, as the Pasuk says, V'zos Shenis Tasu, this is the second thing that you're doing. In context, the Pasuk means the first thing they're doing is intermarrying, and the second thing they're doing is they're making their wives into second-class wives. Marsha also explains in that connection, Chedusha Halachas, that the V'zos Shenis Tasu is also the Navi hinting to them, this is your second opportunity. The Eibush is giving you a second chance. Don't mess it up. Anyway, he continues, Kasos Dimas Mizbah Hashem, you're covering the Mizbeach Hashem with tears, V'chiv Anoka, with crying and moaning. Poshut Pshat, it means the women would come to the Mizbeach and they'd be crying and saying, what did we do wrong that our husbands are treating us this way? But here the Gemara is understanding that it means that the Mizbeach itself cries for this. With the result that Hashem no longer wants to turn to your mincha and accept it, V'lakachas Rotzin Miyadchem, or to take any favorable korban from you. And the post continues, now you're saying why? What are we doing wrong? The reason is, Hashem has testified between you and the wife of your youth, that you have been disloyal to her, and she's supposed to be your friend and the wife of your bris. And particularly, you have a first wife, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, that a woman makes a bris. A woman has a natural feeling of closeness to the one that she had her first relations with, meaning, to, generally speaking, to her first husband. And therefore, it means that especially your first wife is Eishes Bris Secha, and therefore the Navi says, how could you be treating her that way? So we see, therefore, that for a man to be divorcing his first wife causes the Mizbeach to cry. As opposed to, we're saying, a zibug sheni is already not so bad. In that sicha, then, the Rebbe finishes off. He says, you see, so the Masechta, here we're saying in general, the Masechta is finishing off by saying how much we want to avoid divorce unless it's absolutely necessary. And again, representing the point that our relationship with the Eibishter is ultimately unbreakable. And therefore, Dafka finishes it with these words, Ve'eshes bris secha, as in, you have a covenant with your wife. And the same way, we have a covenant with the Eibishter, which is unbreakable. And therefore, there's nothing to talk about a divorce between the Eibishter and us, Chas V'Shalom, where there's a temporary suspension of our close relationship, but we are still married, or at least we're still in the Erusin stage, and soon Mashiach is going to come, and then we'll have the Nisui, and then it'll be shown, then we'll see clearly that all along we were married, and the Eibishter was with us all the time, and we'll have the final marriage and the Nisuin, which will be L'Olam Vod. Slick on Masechta Gittin.
Finish
with Masechta Gittin and finish with everything that Gittin represents. Yes. Yomim Mashiach Gola, Chofei Nissen. So we learned in Ksubas about what's going to happen with Tchias Meisim as far as the Meisim in Chutz La'aretz. So the Rebbe brings in a letter actually how are these bodies going to reach from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael? So first, Malach Gavriel will bring the bodies of the people who passed away in Chutz La'aretz and bring them to Eretz Yisrael. And the tzaddikim, the Eibishter will make for them tunnels, as we learned in Ksubas, that they'll go through those tunnels in order that way they don't have to have tzar gilgul mechilas, like this we talked about there, that people are going to have to roll through the tunnels for the tzaddikim. They won't have to roll through, they're going to be able to walk through them. We learned about in Ksubas actually, when we learned that sugya in Ksubas, we talked about some of the mephoshim also explained that way, that when it says the Eibishter makes tunnels for the tzaddikim, it means we're going to walk through rather than roll through. As far as when the neshama is going to enter the body, that's going to be specifically after the bodies reach Eretz Yisrael. Which is why we learned over there, you have the pasuk, the tzitzu me'ir, case of aretz, they're going to sprout forth from the city, meaning from Yerushalayim, like the grass of the field, the bodies are going to pop out of the earth over there, and then the neshamas are going to come in them. Huh?
The tunnels.
Yeah.
They're halfway done, it's in them.
The Rebbe once talked about, by the way, I think we mentioned it in this shiur before, the Rebbe talked about that since those tunnels are going to be open from the graves of the tzaddikim, then even now those tunnels already exist, and therefore la halacha, it can be considered that those graves have already a connection with Eretz Yisrael. You have halacha in certain contexts, even though a door is closed, it's considered in certain cases in halacha as though it's open. So therefore, it means that there's already an opening now. There's already a ready-made opening between them and Eretz Yisrael, which is why davening by the oil of a tzaddik has such power, because you're actually in a place which is an extension of Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Continuing with halachas of Havdalah. You fill up the cup for Havdalah, you fill it overflowing, and a little bit of it should spill. The Alter Rebbe says a little should spill al ha'aretz, although in practice I don't think we usually see people doing that. Usually people have a platter and it spills into that. But anyway, it's a siman bracha. You take the cup in your right hand, some in your left hand, till you say bota pri agafen. Because you have to, in general, when you say bracha on a mitzvah or on any food item, you hold it in your right hand. This is a general rule in Hilchos Bracha. So here you're saying bota pri agafen, then you should be holding the cup in your right hand. Then you put the cup in your left hand and the besamim in your right hand, because now you're going to make the bracha on the besamim, so they have to be in your right hand. Burim in the besamim, then you have the bracha on the candle. So the Alter Rebbe phrases it in Shulchan Aruch that what you should do is hold the candle in your left hand, and that way you can look at your right fingernails. In the Siddur, he says that during that bracha you should be holding the cup in your right hand. So you hold your cup in your right hand, and then you pass it back and forth and look at your fingernails. The idea behind, he doesn't mention over here what the idea is about looking at the fingernails, but the basic reason al pi halacha is because when you're making the bracha on the candle, you have to have hanah from the fire. So when you're looking at your fingernails, then you have hanah in that you're seeing the distinction between your fingernails and your skin. So therefore, so now you've used that fire. Now there's the idea also, there's the idea from the Medrash that before the Chetei Tadas, Adam and Chava were covered with a nail-like substance over their whole bodies, and then Matzah, and then after the Chetei Tadas it was removed, and all we have left is that little piece. So therefore, on Matzah Shabbos we look at that. Anyway, then you take the cup back in your right hand and say the Baruch HaMavdil, sit and drink the whole cup. And whatever's left, you put out the candle with it and put some on your eyes. It's the idea of chibuv mitzvah. You want to show how precious the mitzvah is that you're taking some of that wine and putting it on your eyes. So in the Siddur, the Alter Rebbe says that, yeah, you're holding the cup in your right hand when you say Borei Ma'ara Esh. Apparently it should never be down, seems to be the idea, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can still be holding it, you can still do your fingers, or you can pass it back and forth from hand to hand, yeah. The minhag is that women don't drink from the coast of Havdalah. Intentions over here that the one who makes Havdalah himself should drink the wine, one exception being on Matzah Shabbos Chazon, where you can't, but in general, the Mavdil himself drinks, but even if you're going to give other people, the minhag is not to give to women.